the second half of the verse is something that's that. It's Psalm 26. Tadeta brahma pratipadana api sri bhagavadeva pariyama siyati yahu ata iti.
This definition of Brahman, ultimately, I think that's too loud. This definition of Brahman ultimately refers to the personality of Godhead. As the Shruti state in the words beginning Ataha. So it ultimately does refer to the personality of Godhead. Let's see how. Ato Brahma pratipadanadapi rishayo vedas twayi shri bhagavat yeva manasa acharitam tatparyam vachanasyacharitam abhidanam chadadur dritavantaha. They're saying, therefore, by defining Brahman, the sages, that is the Vedas, have placed or have kept the activity of their minds, that means their intentions, and the activity of their words, that is what they mean to say, they have kept them within you, the personality of Godhead only. The verse says twayi, mano vachana charitam, referring personally in the second person to the Supreme Lord who they are praying to. Dvayor eka vastu twad bhagadinam avishkar anivishkara darshana matrena beda kalpanacha tatra-antara-nyasa. Okay. Dvayor, of the two of them. Another idea is brought from outside to clarify this on the grounds that the two are the one and the same entity. The analogy is discussed of a man walking on the ground. Why? What's the purpose of that analogy? Jiva Goswami says it's to show that Brahman is actually Bhagavan, that they're the same. They're talking to a person, and that person is Brahman. Another idea is brought from outside. That's called artantara nyasaha. That is technically in poetics, that's a figure of speech where you start talking about something that seems irrelevant to the topic, but it actually clarifies the topic. If you're talking about something specific, you may make a general statement that seems to have nothing to do with it, but the general statement may support the specific statement. Or vice versa, you may be talking about something in general, and then you say something very specific that seems to have nothing to do with it. The specific may support the general. So here, something specific is supporting the general idea. The specific idea of a man walking on the ground helps explain the relationship between Brahman and Bhagavan. Let's see. On the presumption that they're being different, that Brahman and Bhagavan are different, is only in terms of seeing the revelation or the non-revelation of his opulences and other qualities. The only difference is whether you see the opulences. If you don't see them, it's Brahman. If you do see them, it's Bhagavan. But it's the same entity. It isn't two different things. Ah, okay, so here's the analogy. Nvinam bhucharanam samyag darshinam asamyag darshinam va bhuvi dattani nikshiptani padani katam onyata bhavanti. How can the feet of people traveling on the earth, whether they have correct vision or not, be otherwise than as they are, placed on the earth? The people may not know where they're going. The person may be intoxicated, walking around in a circle, but he's walking on the ground. The person who knows where he's going, he's also, his feet are touching the ground. So whether people know it or not, their realization of Brahman is realization of Bhagawan, that Brahman is Bhagawan. They may not know it personally, but it is a person. It does have qualities, even if they don't see the qualities. People who don't know where they're going are walking on the earth. Their feet are touching the ground. People who know where they're going, their feet are touching the ground also. Bhuvam na praptuvanti apitu tatraiva paryavasyanti. They don't enter the earth, but after everything is said and done, they are located on the earth. Their feet touch the ground, but they don't go right through the earth. They don't go underneath the surface into the earth, but they're touching the earth. So people may not enter, may not fully comprehend the Absolute Truth as a person, but they're contacting him as a person, even if it's just on the surface. Api tu tatraiva parivasanti tasmad yata katam api pratipadyantu palitam tu twayi eva bhavatiti bhavaha. Therefore, let scriptures present things however they wish, but their conclusion is found in you only. The Vedas may be only in various parts, only very partially revealing what the Supreme is. But that Supreme ultimately is the complete person. There's no absolutely impersonal descriptions, as we were discussing yesterday. Then there'd be nothing to say. Any description is to some slight extent personal. It's a matter of, it's just relative degrees. Therefore, let the scriptures present things however they wish, but their conclusion is found in you only. Taruktam, this is stated, and where is it stated? I think in the third canto, 32nd chapter. This is spoken by Kapiladev. Jnana yogascha manishto nirgunyo bhakti lakshanaha dvayor apyeka evarto bhagavat shabda lakshanaha iti. Kapiladev says, philosophical research culminates in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After achieving this understanding, when one becomes free from the material modes of nature, he attains the stage of devotional service, either by devotional service directly or by philosophical research. One has to find the same destination, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So jnana, as directed by the Upanishads, is discovering the more or less impersonal realization of the Supreme. But that can progress further into personal realization and devotional service. The culmination of philosophical research is understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atrashutayascha madva bhasya pramanita. And here are examples of such shrutis that end up in pointing to the Supreme Person. are such as, quote, cited by Madhvacharya in his Vedanta Bhashya. One example is given. Hantaitam eva purusham sarvani namanyabhivadanti yata nadiyak syandamanat samudrayanat samudram abhivishanti. Looks like, okay, that's two different quotes. That's the first quote. The second one is, evam evaitani namani sarvani purusham abhivishanti. Actually, that may be two quotes and maybe one. Let's take it as two. And then I have to, the translation has to be broken up. Anyway, statement, the one or two statements is, indeed all names refer to this Purusha. As rivers flowing toward the sea merge into the sea, so all these names enter the Purusha. Okay, it looks like one quote. Let me move the footnote so it's not, I have the footnote in the wrong place. Okay. Anyway, all names refer to the Purusha. Purusha is Bhagavan here. All names, whatever is said about the Supreme is actually referring to Bhagavan. That is Shruti, quoted by Madhvacharya. I'll read the commentary. The personified Vedas address their prayers to Lord Narayan, whom they are requesting to wake from his sleep, to create the material worlds anew. Brahman doesn't sleep, and you don't wake Brahman up. But Narayan has his pastimes of sleeping and waking up. Therefore, Tvayi, or in you, refers to him, the personality of Godhead. The speakers of these prayers are the sages who presented the Vedas to the human race. They are not the authors of the Vedas, which have no author. But they know well the purport of the Vedas, and with that purport in mind, they offer their prayers. Artantara Nyasa is an ornament of poetry, in which an apparently irrelevant idea is introduced to support what is under discussion. A general idea can be introduced to support a specific one, or vice versa. In this case, the general idea that the feet of walking people cannot avoid touching the ground. Okay, that's general. It's a general proposition. In general, no matter who's walking and where they're doing the walking, in general, people walking, their feet touch the ground. That supports the specific proposition that realization of Brahman culminates in fullness when it becomes realization of Bhagavan. As no one walking on the earth can avoid touching the earth with his feet, so no one meditating on Brahman can avoid for long contact with the personal qualities of Bhagavan. If you're actually meditating, there must be some content to that meditation. You're thinking about something. That something is qualities of the Supreme. Okay, any questions?
Just to the comprehensive idea of this and kind of a new point of view Jiva Goswami is introducing here of equating Brahman, Bhagavan, all the same, which was not done the previous translations, like previous texts. So, I just want to hear the comprehensive idea of why they are differentiating and now how they are equating, like, you know.
Why they are?
Like the previous Anucheta, Jiva Goswami says, this in, it's not refers to Bhagavan, it refers to only Brahman.
In the first half of the verse.
Yeah.
There's this much the use of the word you.
Yeah, so now both are like same only. So can you give one?
Some both are.
They are actually not different. They are.
They're not.
One.
Yes.
So.
Right. They're one. So, description of Brahman actually is the beginning of description of Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. Because when you start talking about Brahman or thinking about Brahman, you're starting to express his qualities. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning of personal description. Even though they may be mechanical, just how he's the force from which everything expands. But that's the beginning. And it's not fully Brahman realization, but it's the beginning of it. At least it leads to Brahman realization, to Bhagavan realization.
Like, I have one question.
I mean, they're explaining, the Vedas are explaining how they operate. This is how they discuss the Absolute Truth. Mm-hmm. They begin with the least personal descriptions and work their way up.
So when we say that Brahman is qualityless and it doesn't have varieties, that is only in comparison with Bhagavan? Because we, as you say,
well,
that there is
usually the explanation given by the Vaishnava Acharyas is that he doesn't have
qualities.
He doesn't have material qualities. Or he's not showing the qualities, or whoever's looking can't see the qualities. Mm-hmm. But it cannot be taken literally that there aren't any qualities.
Okay.
Cannot be. You know, it could be understood in a few ways.
But in reality, what is the stand of Vaishnava Acharyas? Brahman has qualities or not? Like,
Brahman has to have qualities because Brahman is not different from Bhagavan. Brahman is full of qualities. It's called Brahman when you don't see the qualities, when you're not looking at them.
Okay. But I still not able to comprehend what it is actually, like, you know, if it is not, if
it's,
it has qualities.
It's an incomplete realization of the Absolute Truth. It's the Absolute Truth when you don't see its qualities. Mm-hmm. It's not a different thing. It is Krishna. It's Krishna in disguise. So completely disguised that you don't see anything. Mm-hmm. It's like someone disguises, you know, someone tries to disguise himself. He can put on a mustache or a hat. But if he has a power to make himself totally invisible, that's the best disguise. Mm-hmm. So Krishna totally disguises himself by not showing any qualities. Mm. It's Krishna in disguise.
But, I mean, I'm wondering what is the use of such kind of... because in the material world, there is a chance that devotees can see Krishna, have relationship with him.
Only if they have a favorable attitude. If they have a devotional attitude, then they can see Krishna. Yeah. What about all the people who have no devotion, who are actually even envious of the Supreme Person? What are they going to be able to realize? They, the envious and the materialistic, can try realizing Krishna without his qualities, the Brahman. It's to help people who aren't capable, who are non-devotional. It's to help them gain some access to the Absolute Truth.
But again, they're going to fall down from that place. Like, what is the use of... Again, they're going to fall down from that place. So
not necessarily. If they don't take shelter of Krishna's devotees and become attracted to Krishna, but there's some hope that those who realize Brahman, that's been discussed just now, that Brahman realization can lead to Bhagavan realization. Mm-hmm. That's what the Upanishads are trying to do. To help people progress through Brahman realization to actually realize it's a person. Mm-hmm. Yes, if they don't do that, then they'll fall down. But there's a hope that some will progress from Brahman realization to Bhagavan realization.
mean, that is in the material world or in the Brahman, in Brahman Jyoti?
In the material world, people study the impersonal, the Upanishads, and they can become devotees.
Okay.
In the material world.
But that is, those who are attempting towards Brahman realization, but those who are achieved Brahman realization in Brahman, whether they ever able to get into spiritual world, that's my
Yes. If they're Jivan Mukta and still living in this world, they can get and take advantage of the association of Vaishnavas while living in this world. Mm-hmm. If they actually become Swarup Siddha and go to the spiritual sky, they can become attracted to what's going on in the Vaikuntha planets.
From the Brahma Jyoti?
From the Brahma Jyoti, they can also become attracted to the association of devotees.
Uh-huh.
They can, but if they don't, then they'll fall down.
Okay. Thank you. Prabhu, you were mentioning in the commentary that the personified Vedas, they're speaking, and the sages, they're speaking about that Vedas.
We're identifying the personified Vedas as the sages.
They're not the authors at the same time? They're not the authors.
They're not the authors because the sages are not really authors. The Vedas already existed. They just received the Vedas in their meditation. So they're not really the authors, because how can you be the author of a book that's already there?
So they're...
They're just like the book distributors. They distribute the books, they didn't write them.
Regarding that one, I wanted to ask, you're telling the sages, they're passing down the Vedas in the human history.
Yes.
And what is the history? I mean, how it came down, like the Shruti we know.
The original rishis received the Vedas in their meditation.
No, how they're passing down to the human race?
They speak it to their disciples. Disciples teach it to their disciples. The Vedas are passed down from generation to generation by word of mouth through the civil succession.
Until 5,000 years back, Vyasadeva put it down into writing?
Vyasadeva didn't write the Vedas down. He also spoke to his disciples. The only thing he wrote down was the Mahabharata. And later into Kali Yuga, things had to be written down.
In the Bhojapatra, all those things?
Yeah, that's later development. Even Vyasadeva wasn't writing. Maybe there's pictures of him writing, but that's not correct. The only thing that was written down, and he didn't write it himself, was Mahabharata.
That also he spoke to the disciples.
Spoke to his disciples. It's considered offensive to study the Vedas from a written text. But in Kali Yuga, we can't maintain that standard. Okay. Yes, sir.
Krishna, I cannot understand this example of Madhavacharya, which he this quotation from Shrutis, that all names refer to this Purusha, and then as rivers flowing towards the sea merge into the sea, so all these names enter the Purusha. How to understand it?
Well, in other words, all the descriptions of supposedly of Brahman and supposedly of Paramatma are actually descriptions of Bhagavan. The terms that are supposed to be applicable to Brahman and the terms that are typically applicable to Paramatma are actually proper, original, they're actually descriptions, qualities, and names of Bhagavan. We can say Bhagavan loans his names to the demigods and so on. The demigods have names and forms, those are borrowed from Krishna. So, therefore, this analogy is given, that all the names go back into him, like the water goes back into the ocean, the water from the rivers. This is figurative. It just means that they're actually his names. The names of everything else, demigods, and the descriptions of Paramatma and Bhagavan and Brahman, are actually properly belonging to him. So because they belong to him, we have this image of them going back into him.
So does it mean like ocean, we know that...
the water belongs to the ocean.
Yeah, it produces the rain, and then from the rain river starts, and then the same river, yeah. they flow over
the ocean. We can say that the rivers are borrowing the water, but they have to give it back to the ocean, because it really belongs to the ocean. So that's the part of the analogy that fits, that the water all belongs to the ocean. So the names all belong to Krishna. It doesn't literally happen that, okay, it's April 15th, everybody has to give their names back, and their names all go back to... That doesn't literally happen. And on some day, all the names have to go back to Krishna. Although in a sense it does. When the material world is destroyed, all the bodies dissolve, all the forms dissolve, and all the names go back to Krishna. When the material world is destroyed, there's nobody around called Indra anymore. But Krishna's there, and he's the original Indra. So the name has gone back to Krishna when there's nobody else to carry that name, when the material world's been destroyed.
You were speaking about the Vedas, and that picture showing Vyasadeva writing is not the actual...
The picture showing what, I'm sorry?
The depicting Vyasadeva writing. It's not actually his writing, he spoke the Vedas, like that, you mentioned. The picture showing...
Vyasadeva writing the Vedas, I don't think that's correct.
That's correct. Yeah. So, but you spoke to Ganeshji. Ganeshji, Mahabharata, you wrote
Mahabharata,
down?
Mahabharata, but that's only the one case of Mahabharata.
That Ganeshji actually wrote it down?
That
Ganeshji.
Ganesh wrote it down.
He wrote it down.
That's correct, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let's move into the next file. File 32, paragraph number 27. We're moving on to the third verse of the prayers of personified Vedas. Let's see if it gets more personal now. Tadevam bhagavatvena brahmatvena cha tvam eva tatparyabhidana bhyam sarva nigamagochara ityuktam. Tatparya and abhidana, what are those? What's abhidana? But in the poetics, it means literal reference. The direct meaning of words is called abhidana. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What? Well, it means commentary, but technically in poetics it means beside the literal meaning, the figurative meaning, and the subtly suggested meaning, there's also whatever the author intended to mean. The intended meaning of the author, which is a whole different factor, is called tatparya. That's, and when we say purport, what does purport mean in English? You know, what do you purport? It's a verb. What do you purport? That means, what do you mean to do? You know, this like someone nudges you in the back and you turn around and say, well, what are you trying to do? What do you mean by pushing me in the back? Are you trying to tell me something? So what is your purport? What do you purport? What do you intend to do? So the purport is what the author is trying to say, what he means to say. And that, may not be just what the words literally say, may not even just be the figurative meaning. There may be something more to it, what the author intends to say. Just like, for example, you're dissatisfied with someone's performance, but you'd be sarcastic about it and say, I'm really satisfied with the job you did. But you know, it's obvious from the tone you say it in and the context, that the context and what this, it's obvious to the person you're talking to what you have in your mind. He knows you. He knows you're not happy with what he did. So if he says the opposite, you can guess what his purport is, what he really means to say. Even though it's not just a matter of the meaning of the individual words. So the purport is another factor of meaning. That's called tatparya. Of course, you got a problem here with the Vedas. Some people argue the Vedas can't have a Tatpurya because there's no author. If there's no author, then what can the author's intention be? But the Vaishnavas argue that just like Kavi Karnapur in his book on poetics says that the Vedas are embodying the intelligence of the Supreme, so it's God's intention that is expressed in the Vedas, so there is a purport. So the Vedas have, the Shrutis have their Tatpurya, they have their literal meaning and their figurative meanings. Let me read the sentence before we get into discussion. I didn't even read the translation of the first sentence. Thus it is being said, you alone, as the personality of Godhead and as Brahman, are perceivable by all the Vedic texts through their purport and their direct meaning. Not to kalpanikam ityahu. This fact, this view, corresponds exactly to the reality, and it is not a mental fiction. Tatayatartameva. It's a fact that this is so. We're not just saying out of our enthusiastic, fanaticism that the Vedas are talking about Bhagavan. It's not just our enthusiasm. It's a fact. It's not a mental fiction. And the Shrutis say so in the next verse. Ityahu. And they say, Iti tavasurayas triyadipate kila lokamala kshapanakatam ritabdim avagahya tatpamsi jahuhu timutapunak swadama vidudashaya kalaguna paramabhajantiye padamma jasra sukhanubhavam. They say, therefore, O master of the three worlds, the wise get rid of all misery by diving deep into the nectarian ocean of topics about you, which washes away all the contamination of the universe. Then what to speak of those who, having by spiritual strength rid their minds of bad habits and freed themselves from time, they are able to worship your true nature, O Supreme One, finding within it uninterrupted bliss. Okay, now we're talking about, the Vedas are talking about, the sages diving in to the ocean of qualities of the Supreme and experiencing unlimited bliss. This is going further. Let's see the analysis by Jiva Goswami. Bulls, triyadipate. The word in the verse is triyadipate. Bo is a vocative address, so it's showing that it's an address, it's evocative. Trayanam brahmadinam patis tatadavatari narayanakya purushas tasyapi upadichara surupatvad adipater Bhagavan. What does triyadipati mean? No, I'm going to read. I'm going to read the answer. O master of the three, Jiva Goswami says, the lord of the three, beginning with Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, the source of incarnation of each of them, is the Purusha known as Narayan. And the supreme personality of Godhead is the ultimate path master because his identity is superior even to the Purusha. That's Jiva Goswami. He said that before. The Vishnu, the Purusha, is above him is Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. More full, the original Bhagavan. And the Purusha is just his expansion in the material creation. Tato, hey, Sarveshvara, Yasmat Twayeva Vedanam Tatparyam Abhidanam Cha Paryavisayitam Iti. O controller of all controllers, because the purport and the literal meaning of the Vedas find their conclusion in you only. Again, you, personal reference. Atohetur eva surayo vivekinaha parampara twat paripadana mayam veda bhamapi parityajya kevalam tavakira loka malakshapana katamrita abdim sakala loka vijina nirasana hetu kirti sudha sindum avagaya shraya nishevya tapak pradanyena tapakatvena va tapamsi karmani tani jahus chaktavantaha. What happens? Because the purport and the literal meaning of the Vedas find their conclusion in you only, therefore the Suris, those who have discrimination, leave aside the part of the Vedas containing indirect presentation of you and do nothing but dive deep into, they serve with confidence, the nectarian ocean of those topics which eradicate the contamination of all the worlds. That is, the ocean of the nectar of your glorification, which has the effect of driving out the troubles of the worlds. By doing this, they have thrown away, they have given up austerities. They've thrown away their tapas. That means their austerities, activities which are for the most part austere, or else activities that cause intense pain. They give them all up and just enjoy the nectar of hearing about the Supreme Lord's qualities and activities. So that, the Vedas are revealing in the third verse how they describe Bhagavan. That those who are really discriminating give up all this impersonal, relatively impersonal description and focus on the real nectar. Let me read the commentary. It is not often that the Vedas, even the Upanishad portion of them, explicitly describe Bhagavan with his name, personal form, and activities, especially to name Bhagavan, to give him a particular name. Most of the Upanishads don't do that. Even when they talk about Ishvara, they don't get specific about his name, his personal form, and his activities. But even though this direct revelation is rare in the Shrutis, still, throughout the Shrutis, he can be discerned indirectly by the hints, with the hints by which the Shrutis help conditioned souls gradually understand him. Everything the Shrutis say or hint about him is factual. They may not say much, and there may be a lot of indirect description, but at least it's all completely true, whatever they do say. They're not exaggeration or fiction, whatever they say about the Absolute. See, that's the authority of the Upanishads. What they say may be confusing, and it may not be complete from our point of view, but it's absolutely true. There's no doubt about what the Upanishads tell us. We can quote it without any reservation. It's absolute authority. Vaishnavas are not presuming anything without justification when they interpret the Shrutis as referring to the personality of Godhead. I'll take the risk. Okay. So the Vaishnavas are justified to say that the Shrutis are referring to the personality of Godhead. They're not exaggerating. And they're not making up stories. They have justification. Wise sages with insight into the meaning of the Vedas know the ecstasy of Bhagavan realization, of relishing his personal qualities and their own service to him. But when these sages are approached by students who are not fit to understand the Supreme as a person, they often do not share these realizations with them, and instead teach them lower grades of karma and jnana. We don't do that in this sampradaya, but it is done. Lord Chaitanya is forcing us to present only pure devotional service. But more traditionally, the person may teach something on a lower level than what he himself has realized, because the candidates are not ready for anything else. In this same mood of discriminating teachers, the Shrutis themselves only sometimes openly glorify the personality of Godhead. But although lesser intentions may be accomplished by following the Karmakanda and Gyanakanda of the Vedas, only pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, as taught by the most confidential Shrutis and Smritis, can fully satisfy the soul. Kam shantak parmanam siddhim yajanta iha devataha shipram hi manushe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. Men in this world desire success in fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get result from fruitive work in this world. And then two verses later, namam karmani limpanti name karmapale spriha iti mam yobe jananti janati karmabir nasabadyate. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. Okay, Jai Radha Krishna Guru.
The higher things, the Bhagavan, they, when the students who are not qualified approach them, they give her the lower thing like Karmakanda, Gyanakanda.
Yes.
You mentioned that some of the sampradayas do, but Lord Chaitanya does not do. He forces upon them the bhakti like that. And I'm just interested to know, what are the other sampradayas, what they give and how?
Other sampradayas are trying, even in Kali Yuga, to teach Mishra forms of bhakti. There are other sampradayas generally, other Vaishnava sampradayas, what they're actually practicing and teaching is Karma Mishra and Jnana Mishra Bhakti. But from our point of view, Krishnadas Kaviraj's judgment is that you cannot make substantial Krishna conscious progress in Kali Yuga by doing that. You have to, in Kali Yuga, it's either pure devotional service or you won't make any real progress. You can avoid falling down into an animal life by practicing mixed devotional service, but you won't make substantial advancement in Kali Yuga.
The other sampradayas, they present the students who are not qualified the lesser Mishra Bhaktis, but it's available in
the also sampradaya. The teachers may not be on any higher level also.
Oh, there is a scope that they may not have pure devotional service?
Yes. Those are, generally we see the sannyasis who are taking position of acharyas, they're practicing some kind of Jnana Mishra Bhakti, generally, in the other sampradayas. I won't say in all cases, but there's a general tendency for the congregation to be practicing mixed Karma Mishra Bhakti. They're not really aiming directly for liberation. They're satisfied to stay in this world and have a successful life as devotees. And the spiritual leaders, the teachers, the gurus, are somewhat on the Jnana side. They're practicing Jnana Mishra Bhakti.
That is the present leaders and the gurus or sannyasis.
We would say generally in the other Vaishnava sampradayas, that's the general state of affairs.
The predecessors?
Yes.
The predecessor acharyas also in their sampradayas?
No, well, I don't know. I don't, this is a general tendency. I'm not fit to specifically judge the individuals.
Mm-hmm. So, Vedas are mostly speaking about the personal realization, mostly. And then we have some, mostly they speak about Brahman without qualities, mostly. But then we have some hints that actually Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has qualities. So now when we meet this kind of statements, we might we have two choices. Like impersonalists, they're trying to deny this the statements and keep understanding that actually is supreme Brahman is impersonal. But Vaishnavas, they understand that this is real.
Right, but this is a misunderstanding, a misinterpretation of the Vedas, of the Upanishads, to say that they're describing absolute truth with no qualities. They're not doing that. All the descriptions, and Vyasadeva says this in the Vedanta Sutra, everything that's said about the absolute truth is description of qualities. There's no description. You can't say anything if you don't mention the qualities. So there may be statements that say the Supreme has no qualities, but it can't be taken literally because so much is said about the qualities of the Supreme all throughout the Vedas. And even saying that he has no qualities, that's a quality. To have no qualities is a quality. To be aguna is a quality. Nirguna is a quality. Especially when it really means not having any material qualities. It's really a quality. So the Vedas, it's a false understanding to say that the Upanishads are describing a completely impersonal Supreme. They're not doing that.
But still somebody might come to this conclusion. And then,
people do, but they're wrong.
And then when they see this description about personal qualities, yes. Maybe it's like, I'm trying to understand what is the factor, what really inspires them to believe in the statements and then starts in some way practicing devotional service. And then
when they accept the association and the authority of Vaishnavas, then they can be dragged out of their dark cave. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, people are in a dark room watching a movie or something or TV, and you come in and turn all the lights on, they get mad at you. Mm-hmm. You know, we're sitting peacefully in the dark and you're turning all the lights on. So if you reveal the personality of Godhead in your Upanishad, people will say, that Upanishad is bogus anyway. Mm-hmm. Gopal Tapani was written by some Vaishnavas. You know, if the Upanishads try to become too personal, they'll be rejected.
Mm-hmm. So it's...
What are you turning the lights on for? We're sitting peacefully in the dark.
It's only by very, very good fortune they can accept this part of devotional service.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The key, the hope that people may be able to make this transition is the association of Vaishnavas. Because the Vaishnavas can guide them through this difficult transition.
And maybe one of the ways how Vaishnavas they can help them is to in some way involve them into some practice of devotional service. And then they can feel some taste which is higher than impersonal realization. And because of that, they can try to get some more of this taste, and then they can believe that actually what is speaking about the Lord.
And in previous ages, there are various methods of gradual introduction to devotional service, but they're not effective in Kali Yuga. The gradual processes don't work in Kali Yuga. They may do something, but they don't lead to the supreme perfection in Kali Yuga. You can practice Ashtanga Yoga, but it won't make you Krishna conscious in Kali Yuga.
Yes. I have also one technical question about, you mentioned in the very beginning about Apitthana and Tatparya. So Tatparya, is it the same with what is said Vivaksha? Vivaksha means implied meaning.
Yeah, you can say Vivaksha is the same as Tatparya, yes.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Okay, but we're over time. We're 5 minutes over time already. So let's continue tomorrow. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.